Welcome to the Michael Rivera What Really Happened radio show.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show today. It's Tuesday, December 2nd, and this is a pre-recorded show for this segment. And we're going to be followed by a best-of for the remaining part of the show because, well, the day job kicked in. That's all I can say about that. And I'm off working at that, which brings me a few extra dollars to pay the bills with. But I did want to come on here and do a little talk. First of all, about, well, continuing the economic situation. Now, as I'm recording this, the Dow is up about 200 points. It's kind of struggling back from that huge, huge downturn yesterday. And I'm not even sure why it's doing this, because the news from all quarters continues to be very, very negative. Everybody's reporting huge losses. The governors of the states are pleading with Barack Obama for a bailout for them. And I'm very concerned that for all his talk about change, Barack Obama is just doing what all of the governments have done, which is to print up a bunch of money on the tab of the taxpayer and hand it out. And I remember about a week ago I was saying that the manner in which Paulson kept changing how the $700 billion bailout, the TARP bailout, was being used was to me evidence that they never really had a plan on how to fix the economy going in. And today I'm rather validated, vindicated, if you will, by an article in the New York Times which basically says the same thing, that experts looking at our current fiscal policy are saying they don't see a coherent plan. It's basically the government is just printing up all this money and throwing it at anybody who says, I've got a crisis, I've got a crisis, I've got a crisis, and nobody's really thinking about where this money is going to be repaid from. And if it isn't repaid from, it's going to create inflation and destroy the value of the dollar. And the bottom line here is that for all the talk about wanting to fix the economy, Barack Obama is, as his predecessor, ignoring the real cause of the problem. We don't want more credit. We want jobs. We want clients. We want customers. We want a business climate that allows us to create and sell products to other countries to offset the products that we buy from them. That has been the problem all along. And it is typified by the fact that we have Ford, along with the other automakers, going back to Congress. Now they have a plan. They're asking, excuse me, they're asking for billions of dollars in bailout, and they're going to take the money. And what are they doing with the money? Well, they're building factories. Well, that's a good thing, except the factories are down in Brazil. And it does not seem to serve the public interest to be propping up corporations who continue to send the jobs overseas. Somehow, there's this disconnect between our government and the reality of life in America. And the part that I think is really should be troubling to all of you is that Barack Obama is borrowing money and throwing it at the corporations as if he is convinced that we, the American people, still have lots of money that we would just be happy to pay in additional taxes, about $100,000 per household right now for everything that's been committed to. And he doesn't seem to understand we're broke, too. We're just as broke as the government. We're just as broke as the corporations. The foundation of the economy was the working class, and they have just been absolutely decimated by the policies of the preceding administration. And Barack Obama does not seem to be heading into anything that suggests he's going to reverse that. You know, he's talking about putting people to work patching roads and stuff, and that all sounds very good and very reminiscent of FDR. But the United States used to be a technological nation, and we need to be stimulating and creating technological manufacturing jobs so that we can regain a position of prominence in the world's electronics, computers, video, high tech in general. Marketplace. Because if we don't, then we're definitely doomed. Personally, I think we are anyway. And the reason has to do with the Federal Reserve. And a lot of attention is coming onto the Federal Reserve right now. People are beginning to understand that our monetary system is not based on units of wealth. We the people are the units of wealth. We the herd. We're the wealth. Everything else is just shuffling debt around from one person to another and gaming the system. There is a video called Money as Debt. It's currently linked to the front page of whatreallyhappened.com. If you have not seen this video, you must watch it. It's 47 minutes long. Call it 50 minutes, call it an hour. You need to make that time available in one chunk, and you need to watch this video because it explains just how the bankers have swindled us all, because we're paying all this interest on money that was just created out of thin air. And there is really the problem with a fiat reserve, fractional reserve banking system. Because the instant the Federal Reserve started printing up paper money and loaning it at interest to the U.S. government to use as legal tender, more money is owed than is actually in existence. It doesn't matter how much money the Federal Reserve prints up. The instant it goes out the door, that same money is owed back to the Federal Reserve plus interest. So more money is always owed to the Federal Reserve than actually exists in the system. Now, obviously, if we go out and we're doing a good international business and we're bringing more money in from outside, that can all be offset. But obviously, that has not been the case for many, many years. With the abandonment of American manufacturing, our trade imbalance has been horrific going back for the last couple of years. It's been, you know, $1 billion, $1.5 billion, sometimes even $2 billion a day trade imbalance, putting a huge downforce on the dollar. And you can't keep that up forever, even if you are the world's reserve currency. So that is the key problem and why we're in so much trouble, because we've just been going on all this time. We're borrowing all this money from the Federal Reserve, or to be more accurate, the government on our behalf is borrowing all this money from the Federal Reserve, which means we the people are always in debt for more money than actually exists in the system. And that right there tells you fundamentally that sooner or later the system must collapse. Sooner or later, the Federal Reserve system must collapse, or the nation that is dependent on the Federal Reserve must collapse, because it reaches a point where it cannot sustain the debt load. It can't even make the interest payments. We're there already. The U.S. government, I mean, every penny of income tax collected by the U.S. government does not even match the interest on the government's debt to the Federal Reserve and others. It's a huge debt hole. And all Barack Obama seems to be doing right now is just shuffling the debt from one place to the other, to the other, to the other, to the other. And that really, in a nutshell, is why we are in such trouble. Now, as I mentioned at the top of this segment, we're pre-recording this one segment for today so that there's a little bit of new content. Coming back from the break, we're going to be playing a best of from a week or so ago. And at this point, I expect I'll be back live for tomorrow's show. And I thank you for your patience and forbearance. But like everybody else, you know, I have a job I have to go to and make money. I don't make money off this radio show. I don't make any money off this radio show. So I got to go out and I got to do the job that I do. So thank you for your patience. And I don't know if you can hear it in the microphone. It is pouring rain out here today on the island of Oahu. The sun isn't actually up yet. But I'm going to be walking out the door in about an hour, and I'm no doubt I'm going to get wet. Yeah, you can hear that in the distance. So that brings us to an end of the first segment of our show. And I want to say one more thing real quick, and that is, if you are one of these people dealing with foreclosures or back taxes or credit card defaults, remember, you didn't create the situation. It was created for you. You didn't do anything wrong. You were caught up in other people's greed. Don't get depressed. Get angry. It's going to take you a lot further. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show. Our guest today is Dick Allgaier. We're talking about all kinds of interesting things in the news. And during the break, I went back out in a browser, and I have forgotten the name of the gentleman that you mentioned, Larry Sinclair. Yes,
yeah.
I'm very much aware of the claims that he's made about gay sex and drugs with Obama. And I think the reason I tuned him out is I think it's already pretty obvious that this is going to be a very ugly, acrimonious campaign. It already has been during the primary season. We have candidates and a media which is desperate not to talk about certain issues, or at least to downplay certain issues, in particular the wars and the economy. And this is why we're hearing about various candidates' pastors and what they're saying and whether they're wearing the flag pins or not. It really, it's a great deal of fluff and froth. And we're not really getting a strong sense of whether the candidates really have any kind of a plan to turn the economy around. Personally, I don't think
they can.
It took us 30 years to get here.
What plan could they have? You can't get to that level of politics unless you're totally involved with the corporate, you know, banking structure, you know, the status quo. You can't, can't get to that level and have a thought that is counter to what the controllers want, do you think?
Well, 9 times out of 10, that is true. But I remember back an interesting anecdote from the Lyndon Johnson presidency, where he had a meeting with Dr. Martin Luther King and started to set out his support for the growing civil rights movement. And Dr. King said to President Johnson, well, you know, don't get me wrong, I appreciate the meeting, but what you are telling me right now is so contrary to everything that I have heard you say in your career in the Congress and the campaign, and I'm a little bit shocked. And Lyndon Johnson said, well, back then I was campaigning, and now I'm the president. And you know that old Negro spiritual, free at last, thank God Almighty, I'm free at last. And that was Johnson's way of saying, okay, I've got the job, now I'm going to do what I think is right. And we have seen some presidencies in the past where they will get there, sometimes by accident, like Harry Truman. And once they're in the job, they start to say, maybe instead of paying back so many favors and everything, I've got a chance here to really affect some change. And I think we're more likely to see that kind of a phenomenon with Obama. We certainly will not see it at all with McCain, Mr. Keating scandal.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And all the rest of that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think John F. Kennedy maybe tried to do that, and he blew his head off. So.
Yeah, that's, you can only go
there's
so
that.
Far with
you
that
know,
kind
I,
of...
I, well, you're more optimistic than me, and that's good. I need to go have dinner with you again. Maybe it'll rub off.
We got a great restaurant out here in Iowa. We want to take you to. We just discovered it. It just opened up. Our neighbors, the cook there, it's wonderful. You two got to come out. We got to take you to dinner. Anyway, we got a caller on the line. We've got Tiger calling from Utah. Aloha, Tiger. What's got your claws in an uproar?
Well, I just wanted to call and make Allgaier honest.
Yeah,
Tiger. Tiger's an old friend of mine, Michael. We used to play in a band together like 30 years ago.
Cool.
Yeah, we performed under a variety of names. One night we were Sea Pig.
Yeah. But Tiger's a fellow who woke up. You know, he's one of the few people I can talk to and who really has an idea of what's going on. He reads your website, Michael, and he reads a lot and watches a lot of videos on the internet and keeps up to date with what's going on.
Yes, we both suffer from and benefit from ORD, obsessive reading disorder. Right now,
yeah, I know it's a terrible thing there because you don't sleep nights very well, and you just realize, ooh boy, you know it's kind of ugly out there. But you know, I think the good news is that all of the blogs collectively, all the alternative media collectively, we have fundamentally changed the way information flows in the society. And the bottom line is, and the reason I'm optimistic, is that those governmental structures that evolve to meet the new reality will survive and prevail. And those governmental structures that cannot evolve to deal with the new reality, which includes the U.S. government, are going to go extinct. We're seeing a change in society as dramatic as that brought about by movable type printing. And we're only partway through it, and there's a lot of chaos yet to come. But on the other side of it, we're going to have a world in which governments are going to recognize they can't lie to their population the way they used to and get away with it.
You know, Eustace Mullen said that the Internet came right in time, that we're not supposed to self-exterminate, and that the Internet has plugged so many people into truth-seeking and getting the facts. And, you know, yourself, Alex Jones, Rents, I mean, it's just it's a lifeline for us people, that for those of us that like to stay in touch on a daily basis, because you can go to the library and check out books, but a lot of the books that I'm reading can be 2, 3, 4 years old. So many things are happening daily.
Yes.
That you have to keep up on it.
Yeah, it is a dynamic process. It is a dynamic process. I hope that this weekend you'll take a moment to look in. We think if all stays on schedule, we're going to be switching over to the new version of the website, which is going to allow us to really start growing and adding a lot more content. And I'm going to spend a lot more time writing original articles and less time playing systems administrator and computer security whiz kid here at the website. So
we're
getting ready to go into this huge period of growth. So
and what are you going to use that name that you emailed me over the Wake the Flock Up?
No. That's just a domain for testing. The website will remain with whatreallyhappened.com, but we needed a second domain to have it online in order to be able to test it, and that's the one that we put there. It was actually something we thought about setting up as an alternative site. You know, the way Alex Jones has multiple sites, we thought about having a couple of different ones, and that's one of the domains we reserved, so we're just using it temporarily. But eventually, it'll all still be back to whatreallyhappened.com, and who knows, maybe I'll just leave Wake the Flock Up pointed at it as well, and just try and catch some people with that. But a little icon character to go with.
My friend Tiger's, he unplugged his TV pretty much. He stopped.
Yeah.
Did you stop watching Tiger?
Yes, the television has been disconnected. Yeah, I just refuse. I get online at about, I get up early, 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. I go online. I listen to pre-recorded programs, Rants and GCN stuff like Michael. And then I might turn on the TV at 8 or 9 o'clock and watch about 5 minutes of national news. But the first story is usually so insulting to people that are getting real information, it's become intolerable.
Well, you've got to be watching Dick's
Network. I can't unplug my TV because I'm on the darn thing, you know.
Well, and Dick, you're the only person that I can share with this.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dick... Dick, one comment before we get a break here. In my opinion, you could be another Keith Olbermann. You really could. If your bosses would let you do it, you would be right up there with Keith Olbermann and his ratings, and I seriously mean that. We got to take a break here and pay some bills. If you want to join us on the air, 866-582-9933. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We still have our guest, Dick Allgaier, on the phone. We also have Tiger calling in from Utah, and we are getting more and more emails from our listeners. One just came in over the break here I want to bring up to talk about. Hey, Mike, surely you've heard about Obama's stated plans for a domestic Stasi-like security force. It's been all over the web today. What do you and your guest have to say about this? And before I hand it off to Dick and Tiger, my comment here is that we already have a Stasi-like security force. It's called the Federal Bureau of Investigations. But as far as Obama's claim that we need a powerful civilian security force, this is not something he has said prior to now. So my sense of it is that Obama is trying to move to center, and that he's trying to play to the national paranoia about terrorism and to basically undercut McCain's position. And this is kind of a very bizarre way, because we're going into the national election trying to decide which candidates to support, not on the base of what they're saying, but on the basis of what we think they're saying that is not exactly what they're going to do. And it's kind of a bizarre situation. I think Obama's playing politics here, and I don't like it, because I don't, you know, I'm troubled by what he's saying. It does seem to be erasing the differences between him and McCain. And I think the reason that he had his early support and was able to take the nomination away from Hillary Clinton is that people did see him as a voice for change. Now he's moving away from that. Could be a big mistake. Dick, what's your opinion?
Well, I haven't seen that report that he wanted that centralized Stasi-like security. So I've been out surfing today. I hadn't heard that. I was more concerned when he said that our kids ought to learn Spanish, and I think he wants to open the borders. And, keep the borders open. Mm-hmm. I think we ought to seal our borders. And I know if Tiger is in on that, you know, concurs with that one.
Tiger, are you still there? Okay,
like
I
think he went away. But
I think we lost him.
I think you're right. I think that now that it looks like Obama will probably be the nominee, he's moving closer to the center and trying to.
I think he's playing politics here. I have a direct quote here. Basically, now this is being fanned by some people as saying it's being equated to the Nazi Hitler Youth. And I know the words Nazi and Hitler are red button buzzwords for people, but ultimately the Nazi Hitler Youth basically were glorified Boy Scouts is what they were. But the quote from Obama is, "We cannot continue to rely on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, and just as well funded." Well,
he's probably talking about a draft then, because wasn't there a proposal for a draft, but you wouldn't draft people into the military. It would be
the national service.
National
draft.
Service, but you'd be used to guard the borders and to keep security.
Or wherever they felt that you were necessary.
That's what he's talking about.
Could very well be, yeah, because he's talking security force, and I'm trying to figure out. We've already got 16 intelligence agencies that are technically civilian that are supposed to be doing this. But I think you're right.
The one I'd be worried about is Blackwater.
Yeah.
Blackwater.
Oh, yeah.
That's
absolutely.
I'm worried about.
They're crazy people over there. You know, I mean, these are guys who roll up entire issues of Soldier of Fortune magazine and smoke them to get high on weekends. So.
Hey, am I back?
Oh, yes, Tiger's you're back. There. Tiger! Tiger's back. Okay.
I got Blackwater.
Guess that back nine was rather rough.
Yeah, I got Blackwater there. And, you know, the federal ban on investigation, we can't trust those guys to invest anything.
Oh, of course not.
Yeah.
And we don't need to. I got to tell you, anytime somebody comes up and says, we need to force the government to do a new investigation about XYZ, I say, why? We already know what happened. I'm not going to give the government another opportunity to lie to me, and I'm not going to give them power over me to say whether what I know is true or not. I already know it's true.
Hey, when Bush, speaking of the FBI, let me put in this little clip, and this is what I think got me on the show this week, because I sent this to you earlier in the week.
Yeah.
Speaking of the FBI... A friend of mine at work is reading a book, a biography of the first governor of Hawaii, John A. Burns. It's called John A. Burns, The Man and His Times by Dan Boylan and Michael Holmes. So in the book, and we were out on a story and we talk about what we're reading, and he says, Burns went into the FBI office a week before Pearl Harbor and they told him all about it. And here's the quote. From the book, John Burns was the first governor. This isn't from the book, but I'll just set it up. John Burns was the first governor of Hawaii, and back prior to World War II, he was very friendly with the Asian community here in Hawaii, with the first-generation Japanese people who came over. And so the authorities set him to work for an organization known as the Espionage Bureau. And so he needed to get... information about whether or not the Japanese would be loyal. It looked like war was breaking out. Okay, here's the quote from the book. This is page 35 from John A. Burns, The Man in His Times. 1 week before the Japanese attack, Burns was summoned to the FBI office by Robert Shivers. I believe he was the special agent in charge. When he arrived, Shivers called Burns into his office and said, "Close the door. I'm not telling my men this, but I'm telling you, we're going to be attacked before the week is out." Burns recalled that Shivers had tears in his eyes when he spoke. The head of the FBI office in Honolulu then asked Burns to send his staff from the Espionage Bureau to take the pulse of the Japanese community. So the head FBI agent in Honolulu, a week before Pearl Harbor, knew for a certainty that we were going to be attacked.
Mm-hmm.
They let it happen.
Yeah, of course they let it happen. Did you get that photo I sent to you of the front page from the Honolulu Advertiser?
Yep. Yep.
Announcing a week ahead that the attack was going to happen. Well, obviously, one of the good things about my moving here to Hawaii is I've gotten to an opportunity to check out a lot of the things that we know or think we know about Pearl Harbor. And you know Hiya State Park over on the windward side by Kaneohe Bay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, if you ever go over there, and I've got a YouTube video up about this as well, you can still see the concrete footings where the shortwave towers were for the listening station that used to be on that site called Station H. And that was the radio station that on November 25th intercepted Admiral Yamamoto's orders to the fleet to sail into Hawaiian waters. And the message was intercepted there. It was intercepted at a couple of other stations. And the British had it, as a matter of fact. And after the Brits decoded it, Churchill sent it to Roosevelt. We think it's the only message from Roosevelt, from Churchill to Roosevelt that remains classified to this very day. But it is known that it was in a code that the U.S. had cracked at that point. The message was sent over to Pearl Harbor and forwarded to Washington, D.C., was not shared with Admiral Kimmel or General Short. And I don't know if you've ever read this book. It's called Day of Deceit by Lieutenant Commander Robert B. Stinnett. It is a wonderful book. It's based on documents declassified in 1994. And the reason it's such a good book is Stinnett actually agrees with Roosevelt goading the Japanese into the attack and letting them attack us and making it look like a sneak attack to get us in the war against Hitler. Stinnett agrees that was the right thing for Roosevelt to do. And because of it, he doesn't have an axe to grind. He's very objective, but he does lay it right out. The United States provoked Japan, acted like it was a big surprise in order to anger American people into going off and supporting this war. And one of the things that I have uncovered time after time after time throughout history is how many wars are started with similar great hoaxes, whether it's the explosion on the USS Maine that was incorrectly attributed to a Spanish mine, the torpedoes in the Gulf of Tonkin, the radio towers at Gliwice that Hitler had his own people attack so he could attack Poland. This is the way wars get started. All wars based in deception, according to Sun Tzu in The Art of War. We've got to take a break for our last commercial. We'll be back with Tiger and Dick after these words from our sponsors. Maybe talk a little bit about the local economy in the few minutes that we have left. Aloha until we come back.
You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back. Our guest today is Dick Allgaier. We still have Tiger on the phone from Utah. And I wanted to spend the last segment of the show today talking about the economy. And obviously, the economy is everywhere. We're going to talk a little bit about the Hawaii economy. And I mentioned yesterday something I called coast mode, and I got a lot of email from people who are apparently having to go through this. And what it is, for those people who have small businesses like gardening and house cleaning and hair styling and these kind of small businesses where you work when there's work and you don't work when there isn't any work, these are people who are finding themselves working less and less. They have fewer clients. They're still working enough to where they can't go get unemployment, and they are not being counted as unemployed. but they are in a situation where they are sinking more into debt because they're making less money at a time when gas prices and mortgages and food and everything else is going up. And so I think there's this huge hidden population of people who are trying to, like, figure out a way to deal with this. They're not showing up on the official radar yet, but they're still in trouble.
Well, my wife manages a small restaurant here in Honolulu, and she says it's very slow. You know, we've been lucky over here because the real estate prices have held up, basically because this is a small piece of paradise, and there are plenty of rich people that will always want to buy property and homes here. But, you know, the economy here is based on people being able to get a $500 or $600 round trip flight to Hawaii for a package mm-hmm. vacation, and that is going away. If it, you know, it's, I think we're in big trouble.
We definitely are, and it's not just the price of the round trip ticket, because as the dollar continues to decline, obviously other nations, especially Asia, should be seeing the price become attractive to come to Hawaii, but unfortunately they just don't want to deal with the harassment at the airport, which continues to be a major, major problem.
Well, true. Have you been to Asia, Michael? Have you been over there recently?
No, I'm
Tiger.
I'm
Tiger
not.
Has, well, not for a few years, but I have been recently, and I have friends who, I have a friend who just got back from Japan, and he was in Thailand, and that part of the world is just booming. I mean, those folks over there, their economies, China, Thailand, Malaysia, they are going great guns, and they see the United States as pretty much irrelevant. They just, mm-hmm. they've gotten over us. They're like, you people in your war and your, you know, just
hasn't slowed down.
I'm hearing that from people in Europe as well. I'm hearing that from Europeans as well. And a big part of it is, over the last 30 years, we've kissed off our manufacturing. You know, we just got this attitude that manufacturing was beneath us. We'll let those Asian people do the manufacturing. And guess what? That's how you make a nation prosperous. You make products. And somehow, our country, our culture, got caught up in this idea that if we just took the money and shook it back and forth hard enough, it's going to grow all by itself. And past a certain point, that just does not work.
How's the immigration problem in Utah there, Tiger?
Well, I was going to say, it hasn't slowed immigration down. Utah's booming. The real estate prices are staying high, and there's a lot of people moving here from the east and California, for instance, getting out of the big cities. But immigration, Utah's a sanctuary state, particularly for southern border migration.
Well, I'm very worried. You know what I'm worried about, Michael, is...
Tell me.
I'm in the system. I
mm-hmm.
work. I have a 401k,
yes.
Right? Is
mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, is this 401k just all another tax, another scam? Because they tax you your paycheck, they take out Social Security, and a few years ago they all convinced us, take 15% off. You won't get taxed. Just take 15% off the top. Put it in your 401k. And that's being managed by the Wall Street banksters. Are we ever going to see any of that? Is that all a hoax? Did they just get us to put all this money in this 401k, and they've taken it, and now they're buying the oil and the grain and the wheat and the corn, buying
well,
up all
part,
the commodities
part of the problem,
and jacking up the prices with our 401k money that we'll never see.
Well, when you get into an overvalued stock market, the only way you can keep that propped up is you got to be bringing new money in at the bottom. Back during the original Great Depression, in 1929, years ago, I worked as an actor on a movie called Day the Bubble Burst at 20th Century Fox, and our technical consultant for the show was one William Hupt, who had been on the trading floor during the crash of 29, and he was telling us all these little warning signs and indicators that had really told him what was going on. And he said, you know, Wall Street at that time was trying to get everybody investing in the market to keep new money coming in to prop up the fact that the market was overvalued. They had elevator operators were investing their money in the stock market, and everybody was buying stuff on margin. And it was this whole gigantic pyramid scheme. And we're, you know, I've been very worried for a lot of years about all these little day trader programs, the little software on your computer, and they're just trying to bring people in to invest in the stock market who are not skilled investors. They don't really have risk income, which you should have to get in there. And the bottom line is, even with the recent declines, the stock market is still overvalued. And what that means is that in the event of a large sell-off, only the first people to sell will get their money back, and everybody else is going to be stuck holding the bag. And that impressive-looking number at the bottom of your broker's report, that's all it is. It's an impressive-looking number.
Yeah,
and
well,
we're
I'm
already
not,
seeing
I,
here
I'm
within
not in
that.
The stock market. I 1 year ago, I called my manager and said, I want out of the stock market. But I don't know what's safe, I mean, other than to cash it all in. If you cash it all in, they tax you.
They tax you.
Percent off and put it in gold or something, but
canned foods and shotguns. I mean, you know, when the dollar falls, gold is definitely going to be your inflation hedge, and that's I don't want to pretend to be anybody's financial advisor, but what little extra money we've got left over around here is going into gold, silver, canned foods, and shotguns.
Well, they say that in Utah, Tiger, huh? Invest
well,
in lead.
Well,
lead,
I suggest people learn how to grow food.
Oh yes.
I mean, I've got an organic garden in the backyard, and it pays off because I've got an 81-year-old mother in the house that is not on any medication, and the last time she spent in the hospital was when she had her last child 47 years ago.
Yeah, the medical system, that's a whole other.
Well, we could do another whole show on that one. In fact, I've been doing a thing on the website today over what happened with my wife and the formaldehyde exposure. But, yeah, I mean, we've got, like, the most expensive medical care in the world, and we are now, like, something like 47th in terms of total quality of health care in the United States. And, again...
Well, we own the chain of pharmacies, and we don't take drugs.
Yes.
Learned your lesson on that one.
Yes, there's... There's the lesson right there.
Well, Michael, I just kind of feel like I wish we could have a place where people who are awake and know what's going on could all gather and they'd leave us alone and we could grow food and have some semblance of sanity because things are just insane. I mean,
well, see, it's the problem is getting them to leave us alone, because once you get a bunch of people who are living happily and growing their own food and they're enjoying a good, relaxed life, there's always going to be some idiot coming along and saying, you know, the gods think these people should be working to build us a temple. And they come in with their swords and spears and clubs and they beat you over the head and they say, give us half of what you're growing because we're going to build a temple to the great and mighty Pharaoh or God or whatever
it
is.
Yeah.
And you get those empire builders, and you know, basically I'm like you. I just want to be left alone to take care of myself and my wife, but there's always somebody out there saying, you owe us taxes because we got here first and we're going to save you from the terrorists.
If
and then
you
find out
healthy, don't tell anybody.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think we're in for some hard times.
I agree. I don't think we'll feel them quite as much here in Hawaii as the rest of the country. But, yeah, we're in for some hard times, and this is the reason why. With the abandonment, apparently, of the invasion of Iran, the U.S. government, the Bush administration, and the neocons are now stuck with this mess they dug themselves into and no way to dig it out.
Well, they need another false flag attack or a war.
Who are they going
to
invade? Who's got the money? That, you know, there's nobody left to invade who's got any money. We got to stop here. Dick, I want to have you back on the show real soon. Tiger, thank you for calling in. Tomorrow is Friday. Open phone day. Call in, rant, rave, say whatever you want to talk about. I still don't have an answer to the question about why grapefruit are called grapefruit when they don't taste or smell or look like grapes anyway. So take care. Talk to you tomorrow night. Aloha, America.
Aloha. Bye-bye.